Community Radio.
It's about real people.
Not sound bites.
Not more talking heads.
Not on this show.
Interchange is a community access media forum fostering unfiltered open dialogue on the people, issues, and events impacting life in South Central Indiana and beyond.
Conversations that challenge the ways we perceive the world around us.
Real people.
Real issues.
This is your forum.
This is Interchange.
Welcome to Interchange. I am Lewis Malone. Tonight we continue our primary election coverage by featuring candidates who are participating in primary battles this spring. Tonight we will be covering two races, the Democratic primary for Monroe County Auditor and the Democratic primary for Indiana House of Representatives, District 46. We will open with our interviews with two of the three candidates vying to become the nominee for the Democratic Party in the race to unseat the incumbent state representative, Bob Heaton. Before we get to the interviews, it should be stated that we here at Interchange attempt to get all candidates to participate in interviews when we are covering a particular race. Unfortunately, not all candidates take us up on the offer. That being said, we open this evening's show with host Ryan Dawes' interview with candidate James Mann.
Thank you for joining us here on Interchange on WFHB. I'm your host for this segment, Ryan Dawes. We have with us on the phone right now James R. Mann, who is a resident of Vigo County. He is seeking the District 46 Democratic nomination to represent his district in the Indiana General Assembly. He has to outrun two other Democrats to win the primary, and then, as he knows, he will face off against Bob Heaton if he wins in the May primary. Thank you very much, James, for joining us here on Interchange.
Well, thank you for having me.
Well, great. So first off, what I want to know from you is, where are you from and where do you now call home? I mentioned Vigo County, but talk a little bit about the place in which you live and where you come from.
Sure. Before we do this, could I extend my sympathies to the IU community and the Lyndon Witt family?
I know that
she suffered a death this past weekend, and I know it's going to be on the hearts and minds of a lot of people in Bloomington. So if you don't mind just letting me share that with you. I am a graduate of West Vigo High School in 1983, went to Indiana State University in 1987, graduated with a BS in social science education, and in 1995 got my master's in social science education from Indiana State as well.
I see. So talk a little bit about the people of District 46 and what you think they need from a Indiana General Assembly representative.
Sure. I appreciate that. I live in a rural Vigo County south of Terre Haute, and my wife and I have one son, John Robert. He's five, and we're just concerned about the state of Indiana, as many parents are with young kids. John will be starting kindergarten in the fall, and looking at the education environment, the work environment. District 46 basically starts at the Wabash River with the federal penitentiary and goes through Richland Township in Monroe County. It has, in Vigo County, it has parts of Harrison Township, parts of Honey Creek Township, all of Pearson and all of Riley. It has the five southern townships in Clay County. It has every township in Owen County that doesn't touch Putnam, and Richland Bean Blossom, or Richland and Bean Blossom in Monroe County. So it's a pretty extensive district that's been drawn up by the General Assembly.
Now, why do you want to represent these people?
Well, if you'd asked me about a year ago, I told you I don't want to represent them. I just want to be a government and econ teacher at Terre Haute South. And we got to looking around at the laws that were passed and what was a priority by the legislature and just couldn't agree with it. And I was asked in class one day if I believe what I teach, and I said yes. And we came home, my wife and I discussed, and we looked at what we thought was best for my son, and we thought this is something that I need to do in representing the interest of public schools, students, parents, all the stakeholders, working men and women. And so I felt compelled to make a difference and to try, and hopefully on May 8th, the voters in parts of four counties will see that I'm the best candidate to go up against the incumbent in the fall.
Now, James Mann, you're using your son and education as kind of a focus of your campaign. Let's use him as a case study and talk a little bit about under the current set of regulations and rules and procedures that apply to the state education system. Talk a little bit about how what recent General Assembly sessions have passed and how it will affect people like your son.
Thank you very much. I welcome that question. I'm afraid that what's coming out of this through the state is the children are nothing more than testing centers. And I want somebody passionate, somebody enthusiastic to teach my son. I don't want them to look at my son as a dollar sign as to, well, will I get a raise the next year or not if he's learning. I want people that have been doing what has been happening in the state of Indiana since she was founded. I want people who are very interested in my son's well-being and every other child in the kindergarten classrooms throughout the state of Indiana. And I'm very concerned that they're nothing more than just a series of tests that are going to be determining whether or not he's successful. Kindergarten through elementary, as you know, there's a lot of socialization. There's a lot of getting along with people in addition to the learning of math and English and science and social studies and the music and the arts. And some classes are very difficult to measure on a test. Some skills are very difficult to measure on a test. And so I'm hoping that by my candidacy and an election that I will speak out for what's good in our schools and why parents send kids to schools. And we're not sending them to be just a test opportunity for some company.
Now, you bring up two specific issues here. I see the retention and attraction of quality teachers that you feel will make the kids passionate about learning. And also, you bring up testing. So these are two very distinct issues. First off, let's address testing and how can the General Assembly affect the way in which progress is measured, the way in which students can advance, the way in which funding is allocated based on testing. What are some ways in which the General Assembly can affect this environment of testing, where testing is of paramount importance rather than, you know, how to get into college and how to, you know, life skills that may be irrelevant to college. How can we address testing? And then I want to move on to teachers later.
Well, when you're dealing with testing, you're looking at it from several different angles that it can be conducted. The General Assembly obviously takes the recommendations that the Superintendent of Instruction makes and has a major say in the direction that it's going to go. When you look at the requirement, for example, that all third graders are going to have to be able to read and pass the test, that sort of usurps some of the powers of a parent as to whether or not they feel like their child maybe should be held back another year or something like that. It's mandated now that all third graders take a test. When you look at the middle schools, for example, they already have a minimum of 4 weeks of testing that their kids are going through. And when you have 180 school days and 20 or so are already dedicated to testing, whether it be acuity in the stages of testing and then followed up with ISTEP. When ISTEP first started, it was a test of general knowledge. And now we're getting it to where it's a mastery of knowledge. And you're getting a very, very big change that's being taken on when you get to the high school level. The kids are taking, whether it be semesters or trimesters, we have four high schools in District 46, whether they're on semesters or trimesters, that's a number of classes they're taking every year that they're going to be evaluated on in terms of mastery of learning, where many schools have classes that are introductory classes to let people get their feet wet to see if it's something that they want to experience. So the General Assembly has the responsibility of acting on the wishes of the citizens of their districts. And I know that Edgewood High School and Clay City High School in the past 2 years have had a graduation rate of 95%. And so that's outstanding. Terre Haute South is 88%. Owen Valley's is over 75%. So meeting the standards that have been set by the state and then the different counties within their schools. A lot of students are doing what they're expected to be doing. And if we had graduation rates of 20 or 30%, then maybe my conversation with you would be different. But you look at the overall graduation rates, particularly Clay City and Edgewood High School at 95%. There are a lot of businesses that would like to operate at 95%.
And we're talking with James R. Mann. He's running for District 46 Democratic primary nomination, hoping to face off against Bob Heaton in November. Now, James, next thing I want to talk about is teachers and the importance of you think that we need better quality teachers that can, you know, inspire our students, that being one of the biggest issues. How can we improve teacher retention as well as attracting quality teachers? You yourself are a teacher. So you can speak from experience on this. And how does this, you know, attraction and retention translate into maybe labor union issues such as collective bargaining rights for teachers? And how does that impact the way in which students are taught?
Sure. Once again, thank you. It's through collective bargaining and the unions that a lot of job security was created. My grandmother was a teacher in the 1930s and 40s, and they had the trustee program, and so you were basically at the whim of the trustee as to whether you were hired back or not. And so through collective bargaining and different agreements, you did get job security. The payments were based on steps and your education learned. In terms of attracting people, there's the innate challenge of teaching, of giving an opportunity for other people to learn. Nobody goes into teaching for the money. I'm always amazed at the politicians who want to say, well, we're going to reward teachers with additional pay, an extra $1,000 or $2,000. I know of zero good teachers who would work harder than they do now because they're going to get an extra $1,500 in their paycheck. So I'm very hesitant to see any program that's talking about, well, we're going to give them X number of dollars. What I think in terms of retainment is you provide opportunities for people to be successful. There used to be a way, hire the best teachers and then get out of the way. Let them be creative and go at it. And I'm very leery of tests that are done on a computer only in one way as to how that's going to be the best and most effective way to determine whether or not somebody is successful. A classroom is four walls with tomorrow inside, as you know, Ryan. And it's very hard to measure from one day to the next the learning, let alone from 1 month. But that's what a teacher does, and they are the best ones and most qualified to do that because if the lesson doesn't work, they go and retry it.
Now, James, talk a little bit about, we've been speaking pretty intensively on education. We just have about a minute left. What's another issue that you would like to see brought to the forefront if elected to the General Assembly, and how would you address it?
Well, I appreciate this. I am very concerned about care for our elderly. I would really like to see rewarding of keeping people in their homes as long as possible. It's a benefit to the community, their property tax owners, property taxpayers. They have lived their lives in our communities, and so I would like to see it. I believe it's Area 10 in your area in Monroe County. I think it shares with Owen. And so I'd like to meet with the people at Area 10 and see what would be best. We have Area 7 here in Vigo County. We have opportunities maybe for day services in which we have a lot of parents or a lot of children who are having to take care of their parents, and they have to make some very tough decisions on whether or not they're going to work. And if we had some day services, the parents could be taken care of by a professional, and then the kids could come back home and take care of them. So something along that line, I think, would be important.
James, thank you very much for joining us here on Interchange. I appreciate your time.
Thank you, Ryan.
That was Ryan Dawes interviewing James Mann, who is running to become the Democratic Party's candidate in the race to become the Indiana State Representative for District 46. Next up, we have another candidate in that race. Here's host Lisa Marie Napoli with Democratic candidate Larry Barker.
I have with me here in the studio of WFHB, Larry Barker. He is currently executive director with the Monroe County Solid Waste Management District, and he is also running for Indiana State Representative, House District 46. So thank you so much, Larry, for being here, coming into the station to talk with us.
Thank you, Lisa, for this opportunity.
It's a real pleasure to meet you. And so let's just start with the most obvious question. Why are you running for office? Would you like to say a few words about that?
Well, let me give you a little brief history about myself. I'm married to Vonda Mills Barker, and we have two beautiful teenage daughters, Brianna and Cassidy. Most of you, as Lisa said, know me as the executive director for the district. I'm a retired U.S. Army lieutenant colonel with 28 years of distinguished service, the son of a coal miner and a farmer. And I'll get back to this in just a moment. As Lisa said, why am I running? Well, as I travel across District 46, three main topics are foremost in the minds of the residents: jobs, educational funding, and their voice being heard at the Statehouse. We've lost over 1,000 jobs here in District 46 during this past decade, while this administration pursues new manufacturing jobs just north of Indianapolis. I will lead the fight for a new kind of industry, green jobs. These are sustainable, good-paying, highly skilled jobs of the future. And you know, jobs and education go hand in hand. The current plan of sales tax-funded public education gets a D-F for dysfunctional. Private business has moved in and taken our tax dollars, around $9,000 per student, to start up charter schools. Now let's talk some serious cash here. $9,000 per student times 22,000 charter students, that's $198 million, Lisa. Can you believe that?
Indeed, that's big numbers.
Big numbers. $660,000 per public school corporation. And why am I telling you this? If you've looked in the papers the last week or so, you've seen where Richland Bean Blossom School Corporation has an $800,000 shortfall for the upcoming school year. Teachers were laid off, administration positions were let go, total was 25. As a retired lieutenant colonel and son of a coal miner and a farmer, I understand the value of hard work, honor, and integrity. I was the first of 11 children to graduate from college, with a Bachelor's of Science in Education and the first to be a commissioned officer in the United States Army. And throughout my 28-year military career, leadership and problem solving were the footprints I left in 49 states and two third world countries. You see, I was a coalition builder, working across party lines to get the job done. I'm no stranger to writing legislation. I authored several pieces of legislation to the U.S. Congress during my military career, which are now law. Just this year alone, I helped write a legislative amendment that went before the Indiana Senate and was passed. The very first piece of legislation I will submit will be to repeal language in Chapter 6 of Indiana Code 22-6, RTW. The second piece will be to reinstate public school funding to the 2008 school year levels using state sales tax methods. In closing, I'd just like to say this. You know, it's not about me. It's about you, your concerns, your children, your future, and your voice. There's a lot of hard work to be done at the Statehouse. Elect a proven leader, one who has chartered the way for the last 28 years in the military and the last 8 years right here in Monroe County. I will work for you. If you get a chance, visit my website, www.barkerstaterep.com, and by all means, go out and vote, and on May 8th, elect the leader, Larry Barker. Thank you.
All right, Larry, thank you for that statement. I appreciate it. It gives us a very comprehensive view of your values, your concerns, and your background regarding the issues in your district. So for those who may not be familiar with District 46, it starts over toward Richland Township, which is west of Bloomington, moving through kind of Ellettsville, Spencer area, through the State Road 46 corridor.
The 46 corridor is what I've dubbed it as, the 46 corridor, all the way from Bloomington to Terre Haute.
Okay, great. So that's the district we're talking about here. And so can you tell me, let's talk about that district for a moment in terms of your constituents. What kind of area is that, and how will you best represent that district?
You know, Lisa, 46 is a semi-rural community, and that's why I resonate so well with them. Being the son of a coal miner and a farmer, I understand what they're going through over there. I also understand in the rural, in the metro areas of Spencer, Clay City, Coal City, Terre Haute, and Brazil. I understand those concerns also by working here in Monroe County in Bloomington.
Okay, great. And could you talk about a little bit more about your background? You were in the Army for nearly three decades, and you said you're a son of a coal miner and a farmer, I think I heard you say. Could you talk about how that's impacted your approach to your political work by looking at your background?
Sure. And let's start back at the days of my dad being a coal miner. You know, I'm the youngest of 11 children. I know what it's like not to have anything. I know what it's like to cherish what you've worked hard for, because that's something that you can be proud of. My dad worked in the coal mines, underground coal mines in the West Virginia, Virginia area, until his lungs was full of this black dust that he had while he was working. And they ended up calling it black lung. And that was due to the fact that there was no union support down there, and they just worked and worked and worked until they could work no longer. Then they just kicked them aside. We went into farming after that, and boy, do I know what it's like to be a farmer. 365 days a year, nonstop, we had dairy farms, and we had to milk those cows no matter what. So I understand the hard work that my constituents in Owen, Clay, and Vigo County do. I really do. After I graduated from college, being the first, I was commissioned as second lieutenant in the U.S. Army. I was proud to be an Army officer, worked hard for my degree in education, and throughout my 28-year military career, I've traveled all over the United States. 49 states I have been in. And, you know, one of my great jobs was being the professor of military science at a little university called Kent University in Kent, Ohio. And I really enjoyed working with those kids as they come into college. We had a question asked to us the other night over at a forum in Brazil. And they wanted to know why we have such a high dropout rate the first year in college. Well, you know, it's been that way for a long time. It's almost 50% or a little bit greater. And the reason being is these kids are coming to college and they don't have mom and dad to get them up in the morning and get them on the bus. Now the responsibility is on their self to get up and go to class in the morning. And when they start cutting classes, of course, their grades are going to suffer. One of the programs we had in my program as a professor of military science was we had a mentorship program, where the juniors and the seniors in our ROTC program mentored those freshmen, helped them with their schoolwork, got them up in the morning and got them to class. And you know what, Lisa? I had zero of my freshmen drop out of college the first year. That's what it takes. It takes a little bit of working together with people to survive today.
Okay. Okay. And if you're elected, I know you talked about some issues that are important to you in your passionate intro statement that you gave us. What do you think is most pressing? Like, what would you put at the top there?
Wow, jobs and education go one and two. I mean, they're hand in hand. Without good jobs, you know, your education suffers. Without good education, your jobs suffer. So those are hand in hand, jobs and education. What really, really gets to the core is, why are our public schools suffering with funding? You know, this sales tax plan of school funding is not working. Nobody is going back to the table and reevaluating the 1% that the governor said he was going to give the schools. Nobody's going back and reevaluating as to whether that's enough money or not. Well, I'm here to tell you, that's not enough money. Like I said, that's going to be one of my first pieces of legislation, is to go back in and bring that school funding back to the 2008 era. And why do I say 2008? Well, that's before the circuit breakers kicked in. You know, the 1, 2, 3%ers? That's before that kicked in. So schools had funding during those era. Today, they don't have the funding. So I'm going to go back after that. The second thing that's really on my heart is jobs. You know, if you look at the bookends of what we have here, we got universities on the east side with IU and Ivy Tech, and we got universities on the west side with Rose Holman, Ivy Tech, and ISU. We've got the smartest, brightest kids right here in District 46. But guess what? When they graduate from college, there's no jobs. They have to leave. Why don't we have jobs here? Why is this administration putting all the jobs north of Indianapolis? You know, there's green jobs, new technology, wind, solar, turbines, electrics, batteries. All of these jobs can be right here in District 46. What we need is a champion, somebody to step up to the plate and work with companies to bring them down here. We've got the infrastructure. We've got what they need. We've got the labor force. My goodness, the labor force is so strong down here. Now we need some jobs.
Okay. How will you continue to check in with your constituents and best solicit their feedback and try to engage them in these local issues?
That is a wonderful question. I've been waiting for someone to ask me that question. I'm going to tell you what I plan to do. I plan to have one evening a week at five different locations. And it's not going to be from 12 to 5. No, it's going to be whenever workers can get off, families can get off, from 5 to maybe 8 or 9. I don't know. But we're going to be co-located with some sort of a government entity already to reduce the cost. But I'm going to be at each one of the five areas within the 46 corridor to meet with the constituents. What I found is these small group meetings, you actually hear what the people want and what's on the people's minds. And before legislation comes forward to be voted on, I'm going to go to the people and say, hey, this is what's out there. How do you feel about this? Let me break this down to layman terms. Let's get out of the legalese and let's get down to the layman terms of what this bill is going to do to you.
Okay. And what do you think sets you apart from other candidates?
Leadership. Leadership and the traits that I have that draw people to me. Whenever we just went in a session up in Indianapolis, and there was a bill called Senate Bill 210. I don't know if you watched or read it in the paper or not, but Senate Bill 210 was a bill sponsored by a Republican senator by the name of Beverly Gard. And Senator Gard was going in and taking away the funding authority for solid waste management districts across Indiana. 71 of us was going to be taken out of the funding stream. And we was told that, you know what, you really can't fight this in the Senate. You really need to let this bill go over to the House and then try to fight it. And I looked at the lobbyists, and that was Ice Miller and Barnes Thornburg. And I looked at them and said, guys, I can't do that. I really can't. Because I think we have the opportunity right now to tell our story. And one by one, Lisa, we pulled the senators out. One by one. You know, the total is 37 Republicans and 13 Democrats for the 50. So I needed 26 to kill the bill. I needed enough to kill the bill. One by one, we pulled them out. When it come down to the actual last day of voting, the reds and the greens started coming up, and I looked. There were my 13 Republican senators voting no to kill the bill. How did that happen? We was able to work across party lines. Like I said in my opening statement, 28 years in the military, working in 49 states and two third world countries, working across party lines to get the job done. That's what I'm saying, is I have that ability to bring people in, sit down and discuss the issues and get them to see where it's actually wrong on their perception, and then we can talk and make it better.
Any closing thoughts you'd like to share?
The most important thing that's coming down the pike is we got $500 million that just magically appeared again. And accountability is so important to me. You know, my integrity is non-wavering. I learned that in my 28 years in the military. Integrity means something. Accountability means something also. To come up with $500 million out of the clear blue, something's wrong. I will ensure that every penny of taxes that you pay go to the appropriate agency they're supposed to go to, and we have accountability, and you will get the report as to where your tax dollars went. That's a promise I make to you. Please, on May 8, go out and vote for Larry Barker.
That was Lisa Marie Napoli interviewing Larry Barker, candidate in the Indiana House of Representatives District 46 Democratic primary. As I stated previously, we here at Interchange invite all candidates in a particular race to participate in our election coverage. Unfortunately, not all the candidates choose to take us up on that offer. After the break, we will be featuring the candidates for the Monroe County Auditor Democratic primary. That is coming up right after this, so stay tuned. Welcome back. You are listening to Interchange on WFHB. Next up, we'll be covering the Monroe County Auditor's Democratic primary. Our very own Allison Bektesh, Interchange host and WFHB news director, interviewed one of those candidates, Steve Salter, recently here at the Firehouse.
I'm here with current County Financial Director Steve Salter, who is seeking the Democratic nomination for County Auditor on May 8th's primary. Steve, thanks for joining me.
Thank you very much, Allison, for having me.
Well, I'm going to start with the most general question. Why are you running for this office?
I'm running simply because I feel I'm the most qualified person for the job. I come from a background in which I spent nearly 23 years as a field examiner for the State Board of Accounts. And if you ever want to learn anything about county government, if you ever want to learn how to do things right in county government, State Board of Accounts is the best training ground. And that, and with my experience for the past 3+ years as the county financial director, I feel that with the current financial crisis that the county's facing, even though it's gotten better with the additional money the state found, we still have a situation in which you need someone that has the knowledge and the experience to be able to work through the problems along with the county council. Because what a lot of people don't realize is the county auditor is really the CFO, or the chief financial officer of the county. So I think it's important that my knowledge and experience would be just right for the job at this time.
Can you go into that a little further? As you said, you do have inside experience already. What are the county finances looking like, and what are some of your visions for keeping those on track?
Well, currently the county's finance is better than it was, say, a year ago, with the additional monies that's came from the state that they found in the Department of Revenue. That's helped somewhat. The county still has a serious problem, and the problem is that they do not have what's called a balanced budget. Even though revenues have gone down and they're coming back up again, they are still less than what the actual expenses are. So it's just like a household budget or anything else. You want to try to balance what comes in to what goes out. We have to be working with the county council, the auditor's office does, to help determine the best possible way to reduce the budgets in line with the revenues coming in, at the same time still provide adequate services to the county residents.
Are there any specific issues you can think of, a pressing need, something that just isn't hitting its budget at all, or something that we need to make sure we calculate into the budget?
There's not really. All departments, I think, fall into that category. There's nothing specific that comes to mind.
What aspects are you interested in researching and responding to once you get into this role? Should you get into this role?
Well, I think basically is we want to still continue to do what we've been doing. When my current boss, Amy Gerstmann, assumed the office in 2009, it was a mess. People get mad at me when I use the word train wreck, but I'll use it again. We have worked hard to try to restore somewhat of integrity, even though we've taken a hit with the credit card issue. We continue to provide adequate service to the taxpayers whenever they need it. We work with the different departments on their budgets. We work with the different other governmental units with their budgets and with their revenue distributions. So basically, I want to continue that. Also, it would be nice if, for example, we could take the claim process and maybe do a lot more wire payments, something like that. Right now, you have to fill out the claim paperwork. You have to cut a check. And even though that's the old-fashioned way of doing business, it'd be nice if you could wire things in to eliminate a step or two along the way. That's something that I would like to look into if I do get elected. However, I will warn people that there is an agency out there called the State Board of Accounts that pretty well tells you what you can and can't do, and you're just going to have to work with them. It's something you just can't just snap your fingers on and make it happen.
All right. I want to ask now about your relationship with the constituents. If you were to be elected, how would you solicit feedback or get information out to the people of Monroe County?
Well, first of all, a lot of people don't realize it, but just about any kind of record that's in the auditor's office right now is open to the public, with the exception of possibly some payroll records, which are restricted by law. They can come in at any time and ask for access into anything that's in that office. We'll continue to encourage that. It's not uncommon to have anywhere from 5 to 10 people requesting records per day on both the property side and on the financial side. We'll continue to do that. I would like to be able to go on to the county webpage and possibly be able to post things such as maybe an update on the budget, like you start out with the regular budget and then you do maybe like a quarterly report, and primarily the budget of the general fund, which is the driving force of the county. Just things like that, be able to provide, because there are granted people out there that like to get onto the web pages. You know, this is a computerized world, and sometimes people just look there and don't look anything else. I'm from the old school in the sense that I believe in the paper copy, and that's important. But at the same time, I want to be able to make things easy for people to access from their homes.
Correct me if I'm wrong. You have there's one other person also seeking this role, Hans Hoffman?
Yes.
Okay. Hans Hoffman is also seeking this role in the primary. What sets you apart from him?
Simply, I have the experience and he doesn't. Let's be perfectly honest with you. Hans works very hard as deputy treasurer. He has very good knowledge on that end of the spectrum. But he doesn't understand the overall picture of the auditor's office. I do. He don't. To be perfectly honest with you, if he was running for treasurer, I'd vote for him, because he's very knowledgeable on the treasurer's side. He does not have the knowledge, he does not have the experience needed on that auditor's side. And I feel that I have the components that's needed, and I think that's what separates us, you know, my experience and his not having the total experience that is needed.
Wonderful. Steve, I'd like to have you say anything else you'd like to share as well.
Well, first of all, I have wanted to run for 30-plus years, believe it or not. My years with the State Board of Accounts, the 23 years I spent as a field examiner, sort of restricted me. I've always had that desire to get out and run for an office, be able to meet the public, be able to use a little bit of John F. Kennedy, Bill Clinton, Ronald Reagan, even, in talking to the public. It's been taxing at times, but for the most part, it's been what I would call a big hoot, in the sense that it's something that I've wanted to do, and as my wife says, you'll finally get it out of your system after 30-plus years.
I've been speaking with the current County Financial Director, Steve Salter, and he is seeking the Democratic nomination for County Auditor on May 8th primary. Steve, thanks for coming in.
Thank you very much for having me.
We wrap up the show this evening with Steve Salter's opponent in the May 8th primary, Hans Hoffman. Host Lisa Marie Napoli interviewed Mr. Hoffman a few days ago here at WFHB Studios.
I have with me here in the WFHB studio Hans Hoffman. Hans is the Monroe County Chief Deputy Treasurer, and he is also running as Democratic candidate for Monroe County Auditor. So thank you so much for being here, Hans.
Thank you for the invitation. I am happy to be here.
Great, great. So let's start with the most common question you may have been asked lately. Why are you running for office?
Monroe County Auditor is an incredibly important position in the functioning of county government as a whole. Every other department works with that office, but not only county government, but every governmental unit, the city, the schools, townships, the library. The county collects the revenue that provides the funding for every other governmental unit's budget. And so it's very important that we have an auditor who is present and on top of things. I believe that Monroe County deserves an auditor who understands what it is to be a public servant. Our next auditor has to be committed to transparency, communicate effectively with its citizens, and cooperate with other county offices to make government run more efficiently in providing services.
Okay, great. And there are many issues, I'm sure, as county auditor that you will deal with in that position. So could you talk about what are some of the most pressing issues for you to address?
Well, I think the primary issue right now is helping the county council in preparing the budget for next year. The auditor's office provides all of that information to them. We've been having some serious budget issues over the last few years. Revenues are declining, and tough decisions have to be made. And the county council is the one that makes those decisions, but the auditor provides the information that they need to make the correct decisions.
Okay. And so what aspect are you most interested in perhaps examining further or even doing some research about?
How we provide information is what I'm primarily concerned with. We live in an electronic age. Everyone on the county council has an iPad. Why are we not providing information to them that they can find at any time to help make those decisions? I would like to work with the treasurer as well in getting revenue projections and actual revenue as they come in to the council in real time so that they can update our budgets as necessary over the course of the year rather than waiting until one time at the end of the year and then looking at what the picture is. I think it helps us be a lot more responsive and continue providing the best services that we can if we make adjustments as we go rather than trying to make sweeping changes at the end of the year. Also, having that information in electronic form helps us be more communicative with the public. We have a website with the county, and we get about 24,000 visitors every month. People are looking for information, and we should be able to provide that information to them without them having to come down to us. They should be able to see that wherever they are. It helps them have more confidence that the government is working for them if they can see what we're doing.
Okay. And how do you think, let's look at your current position as the county's chief deputy treasurer. How do you feel that those experiences will lend themselves to helping you as potential auditor?
I think the most important thing that I have gotten out of the treasurer's office is seeing that our budgets aren't just numbers on paper. It represents people's hard work and their sacrifices in paying their taxes that go to funding what we do. And being able to understand that as you look into the faces of those people and you understand when they're struggling and you see that we have to be very careful about how we spend money because we can't keep asking for more and more and more. I think people have reached a point where they just don't have more to give. And so it's important to us, it's important for us to be efficient as we can and to use money as wisely as we can and cut our budgets where we can. In the treasurer's office, we certainly have done that.
Okay, very good. Any other past experiences you've had that bring some worthwhile experience to the auditor's role?
Well, experience is something that's gained over a lifetime. Every step of the way, you pick up a few more tools that you need. I learned how to budget from my mother. It might sound a little hokey, but we didn't have a lot of money. And when my father left, my mom had three young sons, and she had to find a way to make ends meet. I remember walking through the grocery store with her, and she would have a calculator in her hand, and everything that went into that cart was put on that calculator, and she knew exactly what we had to spend. It made it incredibly difficult to ever sneak any candy into the cart because she always knew when it was there. But that and learning to work hard to make ends meet helped me put myself through college. I had that background, and I worked hard to put myself through college as a waiter, waiting tables where I learned public service, because that's exactly what it is, and that's what county government does. From there, after college, I went into business. I managed businesses for other people. And there I picked up the skills of managing a staff, tax reporting, those kind of things, and keeping track of revenue projections and actual revenues. And from there, that took me into county government, which is, you know, in effect a business. And its job is public service, and you have to be able to manage money.
Okay. How will you best solicit feedback from your constituents and perhaps even engage them in local issues?
Well, the first thing is by being present. You have to be available. Currently in the auditor's office, we have an auditor that's not terribly available. That needs to change. We need to look at new ways of getting out there and talking to people. We usually currently rely on putting public notices in the newspaper, and not a lot of people see those, and when they do, they're hard to understand. We need to make information more available and more clearly. I would really like to get out into neighborhood associations and reach out to taxpayers and homeowners that way. Find out what they need from us and provide new information to them. Changes in property taxes can be pretty drastic, and people need as much notice as they can. My taxes this year went up by 21.5%, and that's a significant change to me. I would like to know those things as early as possible, and so I look at providing information to everyone else the way I would want information to be provided to me.
Okay. And when you look at how you imagine most citizens view the role of the auditor, what do you think that is in terms of citizen perspectives? And what would you like to do to make it more of a role that works for citizens?
I'm not sure most people don't understand what the auditor is. I didn't understand what the auditor does until I started working for government. You have a vague idea. And the fact is, people shouldn't have to know exactly what the auditor does. If the job is being done right, you shouldn't ever really hear about it. Unfortunately, it hasn't been done right now. And so it's getting a lot more attention than it needs.
Okay. And what do you think sets you apart from the other candidate?
I think the first thing is how we view the office is running right now. In every forum that we've done and over all of our public appearances, my opponent continually praises his boss for making an office run more efficiently, for it being more professional. And I think that that's very disconnected from the way most people see the office is running right now. Amy Gerstmann was elected as auditor in 2008. My boss, Kathy Smith, the treasurer, was elected treasurer in 2008. We all took over those offices in 2009. Since then, my office has been praised for being more efficient, for bringing work in-house, for lowering costs, for being more responsive to taxpayers. What have we heard from the auditor's office? It's been mostly about credit card scandals, not providing public information to people when they've requested it regarding those, and now we have $1 million error in revenue collections as a result of a mistake in the auditor's office that's really going to affect other taxing units. And it's not just the county that loses money when the auditor's office makes a mistake, it's everyone. And so the city has recently announced that they were going to, 36 people, I believe, were taking an early retirement. Richland Bean Blossom is having to cut positions. The Richland Bean Blossom School Corporation is having to cut positions because of revenue shortfalls. How many jobs does $1 million translate to? I know working for county government, that's a lot of jobs. And positions equal services that we're providing to taxpayers and we're educating kids. So how much less can we do because of that? The next thing I think that's a major difference is in our vision for how the office is going to function. If you can't admit shortfalls now, how do you make changes for the future? I see an office that can work and should work, and should work together with other offices to be more efficient. I think that we need to be more transparent. We need to let people see exactly what we're doing, see how their money is being spent. And we can do that using our website and reaching out into the community. I think that we need to communicate better with taxpayers and let them know about changes that are coming. That is incredibly important. And I think that we need to work together better with the county council, with other departments, to make things run more efficiently. In response to the idea of county reorganization, several of the department heads, the elected officials, have gotten together to try to find ways to work more effectively and to cooperate better. Everyone has been present at those meetings except for the auditor's office. And if you won't even come to the table, how can we move forward as a county? I will be at the table if I'm elected auditor. That's very important to me. And I think the last thing is, my opponent continually talks about the county auditor's office being two large businesses rolled into one, yet he has no actual business experience. His experience is all working for government. I know when you make a mistake that costs your business $1 million in revenue, you're probably not going to be in business anymore. In government, you just ask people for more money, and that is, to me, unacceptable. I think those are the major differences between me and my opponent.
Okay. So, do you have any other closing thoughts you'd like to offer before we wrap up?
I do. My first closing thought is, I have been a longtime listener of WFHB, and I really appreciate community radio and their getting local issues out for people to hear. As the brother of local musicians, I appreciate your support of the local music scene. We have some great musicians here, and you can always listen to them on WFHB. As far as the auditor's office, I hope that people identify with the issues that I've brought forward. I would certainly appreciate your support on May 8th. Whether you're going to vote for me or not, please vote. It is incredibly important that people participate in the process.
Okay, very good. Well, thank you. We've just been listening to Hans Huffman, Democratic candidate for the Monroe County Auditor position. Again, thank you for coming into the studio today, and thank you for tuning into Interchange. Have a great night.
Thanks to our assistant producer, Shane Young, for engineering tonight's program. Interchange is produced by Lewis Malone. The executive producer is Allison Bektesh. Original theme music is by Jamil Effiam. Please stay tuned for Stardust with Tillman, coming up next on WFHB.
Real people.
Real issues.
This is your forum.
This is Interchange.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers working in the studios of Community Radio WFHB in Bloomington, Indiana.
Interchange fosters unfiltered open dialogue on the people, issues, and events impacting life in South Central Indiana and beyond.
Comments, suggestions, and program ideas may be sent directly to the Interchange staff.
The email address is news@wfhb.org.
That address once again is news@wfhb.org.